My name is Michaela Aliotto-Pierre. I live in the Cow Hollow neighborhood of San Francisco. And I love it because it is full of children and seniors and families. And we're in walking distance to a lot of wonderful places like Union Street and Chestnut Street, the Marina Greens, a lot of public libraries in our neighborhood, the newly renovated Rockefeller one on Octavia, in our small little neighborhood park, Allen. So it's a wonderful neighborhood to live in.
So you're painting a picture of a very family-friendly part of San Francisco, but the reputation that San Francisco has these days is being not very family-friendly at all. It's a city that has a very low population of children compared to other cities of comparable size. So,
yes.
So what do you see different about Cow Hollow compared with the rest of the city, or do you think that reputation is justified?
Well, it's interesting, and you're absolutely right. San Francisco has fewer children per capita than any other city in the nation, in the entire United States. It was not that way when I was a child growing up in the city. Cow Hollow is an interesting place. One thing that people don't know about our neighborhoods on the northern part of town in Supervisorial District 2 is that 74% of that neighborhood is actually their renters. And we do have a lot of seniors who live in those neighborhoods. But we also have a lot of families that are starting out who live in the Marina, who like to be in walking distance to our little neighborhood commercial districts. And so they take the challenge and move into this really beautiful little neighborhood. Our problem, truthfully, is that when these kids hit the age of five, that's when we see our families leaving these neighborhoods as well.
So what do you do to change that?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with our schools. It seems to be a combination of schools and housing, real estate. I had mentioned earlier that we have a huge percentage of renters in San Francisco, which is true, and it's great. But for families who are trying to put down roots, a lot of them talk about the fact that they'd also like to own their home or their condominium or that whatever that little piece of, you know, property is that they live in.
It's part of the traditional American dream to own a property.
It is. And even in San Francisco, our traditional modern dream in the city doesn't necessarily have a white picket fence around it. But I think that we still have those same goals and objectives. And our school system, I think I know for certain in those communities in particular and in areas in the Bayview and District 10 and out in the Richmond, particularly with our Asian American families, that the issue of neighborhood schools is one of the most important ones as well. And the ability to wake up in the morning and walk your child to school instead of putting them on a muni bus and sending them across town or putting them in a car and driving them across town. And so that seems to be a very big issue, not specifically neighborhood schools and also the school assignment issue and parents having more a feel that they have more control over where their child ends up.
Mm-hmm.
And that all three or two of their kids end up in the same school, which is not necessarily something that San Francisco Unified does.
That's a pretty difficult situation when you have siblings going to different schools, even from a practical standpoint.
Yes.
Of trying to deliver kids to classes on time.
Sure. And that does drive families out. You know, if they can get into one public school in Piedmont and they know they can get in and they've got three kids going to two or three different schools in San Francisco, they make that choice and they leave.
So if those are the realities of the school district, I mean, as mayor, you don't necessarily have so much control over that, though you'd have some influence. I mean, you have children, I have children. We didn't want to go to our neighborhood school. I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't something that was really desirable for us. The one that we ended up getting into through the lottery system was all the way across town, and that would have been a very high inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a new method of determining what school you're going to go to, and it's more neighborhood weighted. But still, there are only so many schools that people really clamor to get into. So
right.
How do we change this? It seems almost like an impossible situation.
It does. It certainly is not an easy task, and I wouldn't want people to believe that I thought that it was. But I will say that in the city, we still have 72% of families who'd like to send their kids to neighborhood schools. The real question here is one of choice. You should feel like you have more control over where your kids go. And when you have a school assignment system like ours, where you have seven different choices, and you have huge percentages of people who don't get one of their seven, you have a problem. And when you have families who quite literally are picking up and leaving as a result of that or being assigned schools that they really don't want to be a part of, then we also have a problem. It's one of the reasons why we lose our kids, and it's one of the reasons why we see some of our public schools closing, because we are losing our children and the percentages are not being held up to where they need to be to keep some of our schools open. One thing you also see in San Francisco is that we have more kids than any other nation in the private school system. And so we have, what is it? It's 35%, I think, are in private schools in San Francisco. When you look at areas like District 2, where you have a higher percentage or concentration of private schools, that number is much higher. It's like 43% of the kids in District 2 go to private and parochial schools. So when you see those numbers, part of the issue here, too, is that you have families who could possibly invest in our public schools, who have the resources to invest in our public schools, like in Ross County, in Marin County, in Ross. They don't get the choice of school that they want, and so they pick the privates over the publics. And in some cases, if some of those families were given public school choices, they would be able to invest more in our public schools privately, and we would be able to take the money from the school system and redirect that into the schools of greater need, which is something that we should be looking at, and we don't.
So you would encourage people to then go to public schools and invest in those, the money that they might otherwise invest into private schools? Is that what you're saying?
I think you look at some of the best public schools in our surrounding communities, like in Marin County.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things about Marin County is that the public schools have a lot of private investment.
Uh-huh.
San Francisco does not have a lot of private investment into their public schools. I'm not saying it should be a requirement, but we're looking at our public school resources, and we should be trying to figure out more ways of bringing more of those dollars into our public schools and a greater investment in the community in our public school system, which we're not seeing as much.
Well, we do end up seeing that in the schools that a lot of parents want to get their kids into, that have the huge waiting lists,
yes,
like, say,
do.
The Clarendon or Claire Lilienthal's or things like that of San Francisco. But there are a lot of other schools in lower rent districts of the city that don't have a lot of parents who can invest a lot of money in their schools.
That's
so
right.
That's part of what feeds the problem of some schools being more desirable than others, because some have the investment from the wealthier families than others. So how
right.
do you balance that?
But it's also interesting, because what we're also seeing is that you know, you do have some of those schools in those neighborhoods, like the ones that you mentioned, that will have a little more resource support, but they're not getting tremendous amounts. You know, you look at the private schools, and they are literally making millions and millions of dollars worth of investments in their infrastructures and in their school programs. And we're not seeing those types of investments in our public schools. If we tried to redirect some of our not just our programming, but our school assignment, we would be able to pull some of the resources that we currently have in the better performing schools and balance that out and put them into some of the lower performing schools.
So kind of a revenue sharing program.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's Michaela Eliotto-Pierre. She's running for mayor of San Francisco. So you're the granddaughter of a San Francisco mayor, Joseph Eliotto, and niece of Angela Eliotto, who's former president of the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear how being in this family, in this city, has shaped your perspective of politics.
Very interesting. one thing a lot of people don't realize is that my other grandfather, Mike Driscoll, was also on the Board of Supervisors. When you're raised in a family that is politically active, I think, like mine was, you realize the good that politics, or as my mother likes to keep reminding me, it's not politics, it's government service, and she's right, that it's service to the community. And I think if you are raised to believe that serving in public life is about serving the neighborhoods and serving your community, it has a big impact on the choices that you make and on what you strive to do.
Do you remember any particular issues that faced the city that your relatives dealt with when you were younger that really stuck with you?
Oddly enough, my grandfather, Joe Eliotto, was a very big proponent of neighborhood schools. And there is an irony that is coming back on the table right now, and that we move closer to a neighborhood school choice, school assignment system. That was probably one of the biggest. My grandfather also dealt with a lot of issues related to crime. He had some pretty big crime issues on the table. He had the Zodiac Killer was alive and well during his tenure, and so were the Zebra Killers. And so those
were... In the 1970s?
In the 1970s, yeah. Those were two instances that I remember very, very well as a child, just from the conversations that we were not supposed to be hearing and pushed out the door for. And then hearing a lot about his really close relationship with the African American community was very, very important to him. It was very important, to my aunt when she was on the board, and it's a very important one to me.
Well, let's talk about both those topics. And this is Michaela Alioto-Pierre. She's running for mayor of San Francisco. First crime with a history like Joe Alioto had. That's something that would come up in mind with you. What do you think of criminal justice in San Francisco, the state of it right now?
The state of criminal justice, it's, you know, San Francisco has, we certainly have our share of problems. There's no question about it. There are parts of town that that need more help and they're not getting it. We don't have the amount of police classes that we should. We're losing our cops. We don't have a real good educational program or jobs program, really, that focuses on kids coming out of high school that would help keep them off the streets. As a member of the Board of Supervisors, I passed something called the biotech payroll tax exemption. And when I did that, I did it because we were losing biotech companies in San Francisco. So here we are, we had invested in Mission Bay, hundreds of millions of dollars. And when I was on the board at the very beginning of my tenure, we had one biotech company in San Francisco. Through the biotech payroll tax exemption, now 6 years later, we have 74 companies in the city. We put, and this is the connection to the question that you asked, but I had established courses in some of our public high schools. So Galileo had one of the best biotech courses, and City College has a great biotech course program. And so we had kids who were going through our programs in high school, took them in college, and now 6 years later are taking the jobs that we created. I think that we need to be more proactive to give our young people a chance and to give them choices that are exciting and positive and fresh. And we have not typically, in my opinion, been good enough about doing that.
So you're looking at basically a preventive method of improving the crime situation in San Francisco, basically by giving kids more opportunities, then they're going to commit fewer crimes.
And targeting the areas that really need them.
Like what?
The Bayview is a really good example. Western Addition is another really good example. I had a program that I instituted from starting in 2008. It was a film and television rebate program. And it sounds kind of, you know, it sounds a little silly. It sounds a little she-she. But filming and TV is a huge industry growth for San Francisco, huge opportunities there. And what we have found is that they're also the types of jobs, because they're considered to be fun and exciting, they're the types of jobs that really capture the minds and the creative energies of our young people. When we established it, they're hardworking jobs. They call them below the line positions. They usually start off at about $50,000 to $60,000 a year, and they'll go up into the hundreds. But by trying to establish film and television projects within these neighborhoods, we can draw our young people into these jobs. From 2008 to 2010. The film rebate program put 3,200 people to work, and we paid out over $5.5 million worth in wages. There's no reason why we shouldn't be building sound stages in the Bayview to attract not only our young people, but these jobs. There is no reason why we couldn't, not only by building sound stages in the Bayview, it would help us strengthen the Third Street corridor. These are usually, you bring film and television in, and they do just unbelievable things for your small businesses. They bring life and vitality to neighborhood commercial corridors, and it would be a wonderful project for that part of town. And I think it would put a lot of our young people and a lot of our older people to work.
And at this point, within the Bayview and Third Street corridors, which have a historically large African American population, over the last 10 years, even during the film and TV rebate program. Mm-hmm. That population has been dropping dramatically. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost catastrophically as far as that population goes in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So how do you retain those people? Do you think that could create more jobs, that it would retain more people who are don't feel like there's opportunities in the city or
well,
or
there's what? No question that it would keep people in the city. You create a job, you keep them here. And there's no bigger issue, in my opinion, in the African-American community or truthfully in almost any other community in San Francisco than that of job growth and job development. If you look at our African-American population in San Francisco, the numbers are remarkably dismal. And, you know, truthfully, it's a little bit of a sin that we haven't dealt more aggressively with this issue before. But in the state of California, you have the African-American population. The unemployment rate is around 18%. In the city and county of San Francisco, the unemployment rate in the African-American community is at 30%. And then we sit back and we wonder why we have higher rates of crime in some of these neighborhoods. Well, there's no question that when people aren't working, the crime rate goes up. We see that statistically across the nation. So if we are able to keep our kids in school, give them something to work for, and if you, again, did what we did with biotech, do it with film and TV, and teach them lighting and graphing work and all that kind of stuff in your high schools, you will be training them for the jobs that we could be creating through a more extensive film and TV rebate program, and we would be putting them to work. And you will see a drop in crime, and you will see that reinvestment in San Francisco by families staying here and by our African-American community strengthening.
For some of these issues in job creation and long-term retention of the African-American population, what would you do immediately upon entering office as mayor? These are longer-term job development programs, it seems. What would you do immediately?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, they sound complicated. When we instituted the film rebate program, we passed it in 2008. It took about 6 months. So it was a pretty short-term turnaround. By the time we instituted this program and put that first of those 3,000 people to work. So those are things that we could do, and they are things that we could do quickly. Building sound stages, that's more long term. But microloan programs, I've always been a huge fan of microloan programs. There is one nonprofit called the Women's Initiative, run by a woman named Julie Abrams, who I have... I just admire greatly. She has really done a lot for a lot of people out there and giving them the tools they need to start their small businesses. There is no reason why San Francisco cannot play a bigger role as a city in microloan programs that help people put their feet on the ground, invest in themselves, invest in their communities, and invest in their long-term ideas and goals.
That's Michaela Aliotto-Pierre. She's running for mayor of San Francisco. You were a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. You were initially appointed by former Mayor Gavin Newsom, and then you were reelected twice. What did you learn about city politics while in that role and how the city runs?
I learned a lot about city politics as a member of the board. I learned that, well, for starters, going back to good old Tip O'Neill, our former Speaker of the House, all politics is local, and I think that nothing is truer here in San Francisco. When you sit on the board and there are 11 members of the board and you spend time and energy on drafting legislation that you think is going to help San Francisco and you bring it forward and can't count to six and can't get those six votes to pass it, it can be a pretty discouraging event. And so you learn very quickly that you befriend your colleagues and you come up with ideas and suggestions that bring people together. And as crazy as the Board of Supervisors was when I sat on it, and as contentious as it was, we got a lot of things accomplished. And you do learn that, you know, some of it is show, and but behind that show, there was a lot of effective stuff that actually went on.
And then you were then serving as a supervisor during the Newsom administration. I'd like to hear your thoughts about how he served as mayor and what you learned from that.
Well, I learned a lot. Again, City Hall is very relationship-based and very relationship-driven. And when I was on the board, the mayor was the mayor and the Board of Supervisors was the Board of Supervisors. There was not much overlap. And there was not much working together. There were some issues that we worked very closely on.
Did that bother you?
I think I would do it differently. I think that Mayor Newsom did a good job, and I believe that people in the city really really liked him and liked his term in office. But when I look at my own and the possibilities that lay ahead of me, I think I would do certain things very differently.
Like what?
I do believe that it is, it's based in friendships. And you may not get along with each other, or when I say that, I mean you might not agree with each other on certain policy issues, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to walk out of a board meeting and go have a glass of wine or have dinner together and laugh over what went on and figure out how you might be able to do things differently the next time. It took on a very, very personal edge when I was on the board, and I don't think that there's any place for that. I think that the conversations and the debates, especially those between the mayor's office and the Board of Supervisors, have to be done at a different level. It should be mostly policy-driven. You can get really mad when people disagree with your policies, but you should be able to set it aside at the end of the day, and you should be able to, you know, to break bread at the end.
There's not necessarily a whole lot of that at the state or national level, even in politics these days.
Well, yeah, I spent three years working for Vice President Al Gore at the White House, and it was very during a very, very contentious time. Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House. We did not get along with Newt Gingrich at all, but you did see relationships between Democrats and Republicans that were. That were personal relationships. The political scene was pretty bad, but you still saw them going to dinner together, and you still knew of personal relationships that a lot of these lawmakers had. And we knew, because we were working from the inside, that in a lot of cases they made the legislation better, and they got us where we needed to go, even though what was on the news at night did not depict the same picture.
Well, and what you saw in legislation that was passed didn't necessarily paint that picture either. I mean, especially as it's trickled down to today in 2011, and you see so much stalemate at the federal and state level, even if they're having dinner together, they're not necessarily passing legislation
well,
together.
Well, you're certainly seeing a lot more of the stalemating going on right now. And I'm not saying that you don't disagree with each other. And I'm not also saying that you're going to like everybody. You're not. But when you're talking specifically about the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and there are 11 of you, you know, you're not talking about Congress where there are 232, or, you know, or the U.S. Senate where there are 100. We have 11 members of the Board of Supervisors. And if you can't get your act together to be able to, you know, at the end of the day, let it go so that you can come up with legislation that's going to help our population of 800,000, then you really shouldn't be there. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to, you know, sit back and say everything's okay. You know, when Chris Daley and I were on the Board of Supervisors together, and he had walked into the audience one too many times yelling the F word at people who had come to testify. And at one point, I had a censure vote up against him, trying to pull in that behavior and make sure that we treated the people who came to see us with respect. And Chris and I never saw eye to eye on anything. And so I'm not saying that it's, you know, I'm Little Miss Pollyanna and everything's going to be great. It's not. But when I needed 6 votes on a biotech payroll tax exemption, the first tax exemption we've ever passed in the city of San Francisco on a very progressive, contentious Board of Supervisors, I was able to come up with my 6 votes.
Have you had a drink in Chris Daley's bar since he left office?
No, I haven't, but I certainly wish him well.
That's Michaela Alioto-Pierre. She's running for mayor of San Francisco. So I want to do a quick word association with you, if that's all right. I'm going to go with a couple of words, and I'd like just pretty quick answers, like, you know, 20 seconds or less on all of them.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Progressives.
Aaron Peskin.
He's the head of the DCCC.
Yes, he is.
And former supervisor.
Yes.
He was when you were there, too.
Yes.
All right. So his perspective, the progressives. Our moderates. You can say more than one word or name.
Democrats.
Conservatives.
Republican.
In San Francisco.
Politics.
How about public schools in San Francisco?
Word association. So you want me to not just...
You don't have to give me one word. Just what are your thoughts that like pop into your head? You know, when I bring up these topics.
Okay. In need of help, public schools.
Litter.
Pick it up.
Do you think that you could institute a policy like that in the city if you were mayor?
Picking up the litter?
Yeah. It doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. I think that, I think we need more, you know, public awareness of it. It's amazing to me how dirty the streets of San Francisco have become over the last 10 years. And I can't quite figure out if it's that people, you know, don't care, don't think it's important. But in a city that talks so much about environmental concerns and passing legislation that makes everything greener, it's interesting that we don't pay enough attention to the cleanliness of our own streets. But I would absolutely make it one of my priorities. You know, I grew up in what I remembered as being a very clean city, and it doesn't feel that way right now.
Do you think that passing legislation is an effective way to change behavior, whether it's tossing litter in the streets or getting people to not eat Happy Meals or buy different cell phones?
You know, there's a Thurgood Marshall quote when he drafted his decision in the civil rights movements, and it was, the legal system can force open doors and knock down walls, but it can't build bridges. And I think sometimes that is a problem that we deal with in San Francisco, that you think that by passing a piece of legislation, we're going to solve San Francisco's woes. And we're not. We are a small city. We are 7 miles by 7 miles, and we all have to play a part of that. We need to have a higher concentration on volunteerism. You know, we're a city that won't allow people to volunteer in our parks. It's ridiculous. You know, we should have our kids out there being a real hands-on participant in not only cleaning our cities, but in planting our trees and in putting flowers in our playgrounds and in, you know, one day coming down to help us put a swing up. And we don't do enough of that.
Let's go back to the quick answers. How about Muni?
Muni. Not particularly accessible.
The mid-market redevelopment?
On its way up.
How about the Bayview Hunters Point redevelopment?
A lot of potential.
The America's Cup coming to San Francisco.
Very exciting.
Gentrification in San Francisco.
We have to be very careful the way we use the word gentrification.
How do you mean?
We had an issue a few years ago where we wanted to plant trees in the Tenderloin. And at the time, the supervisor refused to allow the planting of trees in the Tenderloin, claiming that that would gentrify the neighborhood. We have to be careful that we don't use excuses to stop growth. We don't want certain areas to be gentrified, but we do need all communities to be able to have trees, and we do need all of our communities to be able to have clean streets and no graffiti on the walls and, you know, look like happy, beautiful places to be. And just because a place gets cleaned up doesn't mean it's going to be gentrified.
And then how about a word association, your quick thought on San Francisco on the whole?
Well, San Francisco is like a jewel. We're the most beautiful city in the world. And we are a place of such great opportunity. We just need to open our eyes. I think sometimes we close our eyes to our own possibilities and our views are a little myopic, and we have such great potential.
So, Michaela Elliott-Pierre, why should you be mayor of San Francisco?
Oh, where to begin?
Give me a one-minute pitch.
I'm the only candidate in this race who was born and raised on these streets. I know what they were like in the 70s and in the 80s. I know what it was like to be raised in San Francisco during the AIDS epidemic. I'm amazed at how many people don't remember how scary that whole time was. I know what our history was, but I also know what our future can be. And we were a maritime city. We should be a maritime city again. The America's Cup brings a lot of potential for us, but it still is just a small step in where we could be. We have one cruise ship terminal. We should have three or four. Talk about bringing jobs to the Bayview. We should look at having a cruise ship terminal up our southern waterfront. We should be talking more about our kids and about neighborhood schools and about school choice and about people being able to choose where they put their children and having all their siblings in one place. We should have families who, if they want to be able to buy a piece of property, are in a position where they can do it. Where we're looking at the way we assign the lottery system in condos and giving people more freedom so that they have the economic strength and stability that all families need, particularly in these dire times. And we should be really, really focused on job growth and job creation. As a member of the Board of Supervisors, I created San Francisco's first economic plan, which is a blueprint to job creation. Created hundreds of jobs through biotech, thousands of jobs with the film rebate program. We could make thousands more jobs with cruise ships. There are so many possibilities, microloans and helping our small businesses get on their feet. And it's a really exciting time and one that everyone should be really, really looking forward to.
And you should lead it.
Yes. Oh, and one other thing. I am a mom and I am a woman. And we have had 43 mayors in this beautiful city. We have had one woman, and she was appointed first and then was reelected.
Dianne Feinstein.
And I am, you know, I am raising my kids here like any other family. I have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And I am the first one to say that my life is a juggling act, but I am also the first one to tell you that women's issues as a member of the Board of Supervisors were not paid close enough attention to. Every time I had something up at the board, it was always a fight. And it would be nice if women had better representation in this city, and if our families were given the longer end of that stick.
All right. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.